You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny LaRue, your host. So happy to bring you your team every day. And this was an unusual day in the sense that the Warriors had just what I would call a schedule win. And how that happens a lot of times is where there is a rest disadvantage, which in this case there was. The Warriors hadn't played since Saturday when they beat the Bucks. And not only did Indiana play yesterday, but Indiana played yesterday in Oklahoma City, and the game went to overtime. They actually ended up pulling out that game. So what happened kind of in the lead up to the game was that Paul George, CJ Miles, so their best player, one of their key bench players who has periodically started, were both ruled out before the game by Nate McMillan. They're just not back yet. And then also in that overtime against OKC, Miles Turner, who's their young big man star, I think he's still 20, he was ruled out as well. It seems to me from what I've heard that it was more precautionary than anything else. And part of what makes Indiana a little bit flawed this year, beyond some other stuff we're going to get into, is that they are a very top-heavy team. They're relying a lot on Paul George's defense and Miles Turner. Those are their two best defenders. They swapped out a lot of other guys on this team, most notably George Hill for Jeff Teague. And what that led to was a substantially inferior and not top-heavy without the top Indiana team. And so the Warriors were able to, after a little bit of scuffling early on, were able to comfortably walk away with a 120-83 win. And there are a couple different angles on it that I want to go through, but I think that laying that groundwork is extremely important because the Pacers did this partially as I like to call it a show of respect to the idea of sitting your starters in a game because you think you're not going to win. But in this case, it was also more about just the situation. George wasn't healthy. He couldn't play. It wasn't really precautionary in that sense. Turner, harder to tell. And then when Jeff Teague tweaked his ankle, I believe that was in the third quarter, he didn't come back either. But the game was over at that point, so it's not that big a deal. So the show respect games are important for a team like the Warriors because it just takes away some of the stress from, let's say, one game out of every 15 or whatever. And the Mavericks game was the first one of those. Usually those games happen when the other team is on the road because coaches like to play their best players in home games. It is also the financial incentive. And so to get one of those in a road game is even bigger, especially at the end of a four-game road trip. So that really did help the Warriors out, but they do deserve credit for taking advantage of the opportunity, even if it took them a few quarters. And what struck me at the very beginning of the game and really throughout was that the Pacers defense could not take away anything that the Warriors wanted to do offensively. The only stopping point was their ability to hit the shots that they were creating. This was a game where I don't necessarily love to think about it this way, but because the SportView data separates out contested and uncontested shots, and they do that based on how close the nearest defender is. And so they use 3.5 feet as the barometer. And a lot of times, the way people sometimes can get confused with it and why I don't love it is because oftentimes contested shots are better because they're like right at the rim or something like that. It's very hard to get a shot at the rim outside of transition where nobody's within 3.5 feet, but it can be a really good shot. Whereas you can have, you know, not a tough 25-footer, but you can have a 25-footer where somebody is far enough away. So it's like, hey, that's uncontested. Anyway, the Warriors were 21 of 39 on shots that were counted as contested, including a big 7 of 12 from Klay Thompson. And then they were 19 of 51. So 51 versus 39 on uncontested shots. And a few of those were bad luck, just various players missing them. But that does get to the heart of the idea that the Pacers weren't really preventing the Warriors from doing much. And the reason that this took three quarters to settle was because they were missing shots they usually make. Steph Curry was 2 of 6 from 3. Kevin Durant only took 9 shots in the game. I mean, granted, he also didn't play one quarter, but, you know, you get the idea. Like, this was a game where the Warriors didn't really bring their best from the bounce, but they still had more than enough to win. So that's one of the big takeaways, is that. The second one, which might actually be the most important, especially for those of you who listen to the Locked On Warriors podcast over the weekend, was that Coach Kerr did a great job using the bench and using the garbage time lineup. And that's a very important thing moving forward. I talked about that at length at the end of the Celtics podcast about how frustrating it was that whether it was due to lack of faith in those guys or whatever, Coach Kerr in that game kept this weird mix of the starters basically playing not to get hurt, and that game was the night before another game in Milwaukee, which they ended up winning as well, of course, and it was concerning. And then today, he did all the right moves. So the most important part of that is no starters, making sure that Durant, Draymond, Steph, and Klay are off the court. That was done in spades. And then you would love to have it where guys like Livingston and West didn't have to play in the fourth quarter at all as well. Andre Iguodala didn't. And so that's the ideal. But I understand why, especially given the current kind of configuration of everything, they wanted to keep a little bit of continuity. So that group, and they ended up mixing and matching after a little bit, but the original group was Livingston, McCaw Clark, Looney, and David West. They actually expanded on the lead a little bit, so it went from 29 to, I think, about 35, and then they started mixing and matching a little bit more. McAdoo played a little, JaVale played a little, and what that does at a fundamental level is it gives those guys reps. And I also really like that they were a few with Kevon Looney at the four, not any of this funhouse mirror Looney at the three lineups that just can't defend, can't do a lot of things well, to give them reps in that way. But also just the most important part is just being sure that the best players on the team don't have that chance of injury and also get some rest. And so to make that happen in a game that was clearly done at the end of the third quarter makes a difference, not only in terms of this game. I mean, that is a small factor in the grand scheme of things, but because it set a precedent, not only that Coach Kerr is willing to do this, but that the group that he put on the floor is capable of handling it. And yeah, the Pacers weren't really gunning in the same way for it. Rodney Stuckey made a few shots late that, you know, it didn't push the margin or anything like that, but they were scoring somewhat offensively. And so now the Warriors can go into blowout games or games that become blowouts with the understanding that they can go to combinations of players and have them hold the line. When it's a 30-point lead, really all a team has to do is dribble the ball for close to 24 seconds, put up some sort of shot, and try a little bit on defense. That's all it takes. But sometimes it's going to be 20, and that'll be another test for Kerr, is basically where the line gets to at a given point. But you need to set a line somewhere, and 30 points ended up being it for now. And so we'll see over the course of the next couple of weeks. It's hard to necessarily pinpoint it. The Lakers will actually be on a back-to-back, on the tail end of a back-to-back, when they're at Oracle on Wednesday. So that could be a possibility for it as well. We'll see. The Lakers did obviously play the Warriors incredibly well in their last game, which also gives Golden State more motivation day before Thanksgiving. We'll see if that factors in as well. But so the Warriors took care of business in the first three quarters and then took care of business in the fourth quarter. And it took a real team effort, because there were players that just weren't really doing it. Steph Curry in particular looked off early in the game, and that is something fundamentally different than not making his shots. He's somebody, you know, when you watch him, as much as we all have, there are nights where it just looks a little bit uncomfortable. And I don't know if it was that we talked, Nate Duncan and I talked a little bit on the 15 and 60 that's actually will have just been released when most of you listen to this, about the Warriors, that he's not doing as well in isolations and he's not doing as well in kind of those individual scoring capacities. So ISOs are a good one of those, but he's killing it off screens, killing it in kind of the catch and shoot, the spot up type of things. And so this game was different because he was struggling in those as well. He had a couple of really nice moments, though. He had a great offensive rebound, and then I believe he got an and one on Jeff Teague, actually a point guard that's smaller and thinner than he is. I mean, most guys are shorter, but just less mass. And he also got to the line eight times, made those, and that provided the foundation. And 6-for-11 from the field is certainly fine, even though 2-of-6 from three is not a Stephen Curry performance. But it was more about just watching him, and that the feel wasn't exactly there. And every player who has ever played the game has those moments. Heck, Kevin Durant has been one of the most consistent offensive players around, and he had an off night as well. And the Warriors were able to go outside of that, get a nice performance from Andre Iguodala. Andre was 3-of-5 from three, did an excellent job of making sure that his feet were under him for every single make, and I think at least one of the misses as well. JaVale caught a couple lobs. Draymond got to the line twice, but also made some shots from the field. He missed his threes, but you know, he made a couple nice layups, and they got a team effort. They did well enough in that area, and then they also defended reasonably well. It has to be noted that this depleted Indiana team was not exactly forceful out there. But one thing I really liked that the Warriors did was, especially early on, Al Jefferson, not usually their starting center, but one of those players who just changes the game when he's in because he's a force. He's a big dude. And when he got the ball, I think it was on the first possession of the game, but it happened throughout the first half. Periodically, the Warriors would double him. And Jefferson deserves a lot of credit for not turning the ball over. But what the Warriors were doing in those circumstances was saying, we're not going to let him beat us, and we're going to make it work on everybody else. And they absolutely did. I mean, you could see that all over the floor, was that they were putting the trust in their scheme, and you could say putting the trust in the Pacers not being able to do it. And the Pacers responded to that by only attempting six threes and only making one of them, which was a Glenn Robinson one, which I think was kind of fluky. I think it was in the very early part of the game. And then they shot 34% from the field in that first half. So the Pacers were challenging them to create and to make shots with the people who weren't as good at that. And while Jeff Teague had a huge game against Oklahoma City, he was a little bit tired. And the only guy for them who really did step up outside of Teague was Rodney Stuckey. Stuckey did a nice job coming off the bench. He's actually been a more active creator than Monte for a large portion of the Pacers season, but it makes sense to have him on the bench for various reasons, even though Monte should probably be on the bench as well for them. So the Warriors made that their kind of defensive mindset, and it absolutely worked. Requires team effort because you're going to be scrambling a lot. When you double the way that they were, you're going to be doing that. And it was also interesting to see JaVale play a game that was a lot closer to what we saw, kind of good JaVale, let's call it, not what happened in Toronto. I chuckled to myself, and I think Nate Duncan and I both tweeted at exactly the same time, that the first play he was in the game, Draymond threw him a lob. Ended up not being caught because he got fouled, went to the line. I think he went 1-2 that time. And that is something that JaVale brings that Zaza Pachulia does not. There was a hilarious play where Draymond did, I guess you could call it like a lob pass to Pachulia, but it wasn't an alley-oop. It was just a lob to him when he was standing still, caught it, and then I think he got fouled as well going for a turnaround. And so the Warriors are getting better at figuring out, you know, what JaVale does well, what Zaza does well, and putting them in those spots. Still passing it to Zaza a little bit too much, not because he's, you know, a bad offensive player, but just kind of in those spots where a guy with a different kind of competency can do a lot, but Zaza's, you know, he can be a little bit limited. So it's going to be exciting to see how all of that moves forward through comfortability, because something I get asked a lot, radio hits, whatever else, is, you know, where is this team offensively? And if you look at the quality of the looks that they are generating, it's fantastic. Like, this is an offense that is already at a historic level with that, but they're not converting all of the quality looks that they're generating, not even at a level that you would expect. I went through this for The Athletic over the weekend, that the Warriors are shooting, I believe it's about 5 or 6% lower on three-pointers this year than last year, and just doing that to the rate last year, and that's not to say, I think it was 41.6% last year, that it's a lock or anything, that they're eventually going to get to that level, but just putting it there would make a difference of about 6 points a game, 2 threes per game. You think about how great this team has been offensively, and that they're underperforming in certain aspects like that. They're underperforming in terms of just making shots that they should be able to get, and that's a different thing that we usually, so you could think about the things that a team can control and the things that they can't. And when you're doing all of the other stuff right, generally the idea of outcome will be there eventually. So it's the process over results, because that's really what matters. And so if, you know, Clay has these nights where he's getting these wide open looks, and instead of going, you know, 2 for 7 like he did in the first half, he's going 4 and 5 for 7, it gets even harder to stop, and that makes it even more stressful for defenses. So you have a lot of that kind of stuff working together, and they're figuring out the bench a little bit, the garbage time thing I mentioned before, but just knowing when to use Kevon Looney, knowing when to use McAdoo, knowing when to use Zaza. And that is more of a regular season problem, and it's something I've talked about this a little bit before, but I would love to see David West, who played, of course, for the Pacers in the past, get some minutes, maybe not as the starter, that might be a little bit much, but just see him play with more of those lineups, because his hallmark has been playing with more of the Durant-y second units, and he has done an excellent job there. For what he's being asked to do, he has been the best Golden State true big man. So I'm not counting Draymond in this, just to, you know, basically everyone but Draymond. He's been the best of that group, and a lot of me is dubious that he will be able to replicate that success with everyone else, because not only are you ratcheting up the kind of the pressure on that spot because it's a little bit more loose on the second unit, but the more important part is that you are substantially increasing the capability of the opposition. So maybe if you swapped David West and Zaza Pachulia, you would get a less effective David West and a more effective Zaza Pachulia, but that the margins, the shift would be the wrong way. So, you know, David West would get worse by a larger margin than Zaza would get better. That's what I feel at the moment, but you still try that out because the Warriors have plenty of flexibility to see what works, see what doesn't work, and they should definitely give it a shot against a team that has a traditional five. You know, you don't want to necessarily do that against a team that plays something unconventional, that you maybe you're getting a smaller five or something like that. Like if, let's say, they played the Raptors and Jonas Valanciunas was out, so they're playing Siakam or something like that. I'd like to see David West play against a traditional non-elite five. I don't know exactly right now who that would be, but somebody in that range, just to see what he has at that level, because this all does boil down to about 40 minutes in the playoffs between a lot of these non-star guys. And who can work in what roles is one of the most important questions the Warriors need to figure out. But this game didn't answer a lot of that, but it did answer the important question about the garbage time lineup. And there was another piece of sound that I wanted to include because I thought it was really interesting. And that was my podcast partner for Dunked On, Nate Duncan, happens to be in the Midwest visiting his family for Thanksgiving. So he covered tonight's game. And before the game, he asked Coach Kerr about the idea of playing guys who, either if it's their hometown or place they used to play, and I thought Kerr gave an interesting answer. Here it is.
JaVale was you played him when he went back to Denver. Come on, you got him some minutes yesterday at his hometown Milwaukee. David is back here in Indiana tonight. Do those sorts of considerations enter into your thinking at all when you're thinking about what the rotation might be for
a
game?
They do a little bit. It doesn't affect David because David's playing every night anyway. Yeah, with JaVale and with Loon, it factored in. I think I know Loon is a young guy, so maybe it doesn't apply to him, but I think guys who have been in the league and played on certain teams, I think they get extra motivated to play their former teams and tend to play better. So I think that can be a factor as a coach. You just have to have a read for how you want to use that guy and when.
So that makes a lot of sense. Guys are more motivated to do it. You also, Nate has articulated this as kumbaya Kerr, that he wants to keep everybody happy. Guys certainly always seem more motivated for those appearances. So it accomplishes a lot of different goals at one time. And when you have a team that is not as focused on the importance and do or die of every regular season game, you might as well make guys happy with that. That's also basically the idea that was behind James Michael McAdoo playing in the Celtics game. He's not from Boston or anything like that, as far as I know. But the idea of keeping him happy and everything like that, and also bouncing around who the guys that are on the inactive list are. And if Damian Jones can make it back and be worthy of being on the active list, that will make that a little bit more complicated, because that could lead to a situation where you want it. If he's going to be on the active roster, or if he's going to be traveling with the team, you want to have him on the active roster to see if you can get him some reps. And if you do that, then you start to get closer to having those 13 rock-solid active guys, and maybe McAdoo and Varejao get a little bit less happy with that. As somebody who is not the biggest Varejao backer in the world, I'm largely okay with that, but the chemistry is important in that way, and so Kerr will have something to challenge, and it's the downside of having six or seven centers on your roster, is that you are going to have to keep them happy, because even some of those guys aren't going to get to play in garbage time if that's something that matters to them. And Kerr managed that very deftly today with McAdoo and JaVale and Kevon Looney in that time to make sure they all got to play, all got a chance to do what they're going to do. And JaVale, of course, played earlier in the game as well. So it's a challenge. It's an unusual challenge because of how good this team is, but that's the nature of it. So I would say it was an encouraging game, not the most informative, but solid performances from Clay, from Steph, from Livingston to a degree. I liked what he did out there, even in the limited relevant minutes he had. And Andre Iguodala making a couple of shots. He did miss that layup, which was, you know, kind of getting flashbacks to earlier in the season or last year in the playoffs. But getting three threes with his feet set was definitely a good sign. And as always, beating a team that you should beat, given the context, is important, because the Clippers are still coming on strong. So many teams in the West are having good seasons, and while home court isn't the end-all be-all, it certainly does help. So that's enough for this episode. I'll have something different for the episode that will come out on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. And then, of course, the Warriors play the Lakers on Wednesday night. And then on Friday night, we'll do podcasts on both of those, probably with guests. I didn't want to rope somebody into this one because this wasn't a game where there was a ton to talk about. And, you know, I want to try to save those favors for when we really, really need them. So if you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, indifferent, you can reach out to me, Danny LaRue, MBA at gmail.com, Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux. If you want to support the show, you can leave a rating, leave a review, download every episode, subscribe, and you can check out our sponsors, Mack Weldon. You go to MackWeldon.com, MackWeldon.com, use the promo code LOWarriors, and then SeatGeek, you can download the app. You enter a promo code, it's in the settings tab, and then you get $20 off your first order. So 20% for Mack Weldon, $20 for SeatGeek, and both of those, you let them know you came from us. So then that will hopefully make them want to advertise more, and we can tell other advertisers, hey, look at what all these people are doing. So it's something that helps really everybody, and they're both things that I really enjoy, and that's why I still do ads for them on the show. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.